Taking a look at songbirds next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hello, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in today as we visit with Vicki Piaskowski of Milwaukee, International Coordinator of Birds Without Borders, Aves Sin Fronteras, a research, education, and conservation project which studies birds in both Wisconsin and Belize in Central America, and they've been doing it since 1997. Really pleased to have her with us today to talk about the songbirds. Of course, that's what they've been studying. And what you and I can do to help arrest that decline in songbirds. Certainly, if you have questions as we move along today, I hope you'll join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. And Vicki Piaskowski, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today. Pleased to talk with you on the phone.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, did I get the pronunciation of the name of your organization correct?
The project is Birds Without Borders, Aves Sin Fronteras.
Sin Fronteras.
Right, right.
Tell us more about this organization.
Well, we're actually part of the Foundation for Wildlife Conservation and Zoological Society of Milwaukee, but we studied birds in both Wisconsin and in Belize in Central America.
Now, what do you study? Migrating habits, how they live in those two areas, or what goes on?
Well, in Wisconsin, we studied both migratory and resident birds in both places. In Wisconsin, we looked at the habitats that were important to birds during migration and also the kind of plants and foods that were there for birds. And also in Wisconsin, we studied breeding birds. We wanted to learn if they were breeding successfully, which means at least one young leaves the nest. In Belize, because our migratory birds spend up to 6 months in their winter non-breeding homes, in Belize we wanted to study the habitats that are important to both migratory and resident birds when they're not breeding. And then we also looked at the breeding biology of some of Belize's resident birds because not a lot was known about that for some species.
How did this whole undertaking get started?
Well, it's a great story. Dr. Gil Bosey founded the project, and he has a migratory bird called rose-breasted grosbeaks that visit the feeders at his home. And so he saw them at his home in Pewaukee, and then in Belize he was in the forest and he saw them there, and he thought, you know, there is a connection here. And so that was kind of his inspiration for starting the project, to study birds that share Wisconsin and Belize.
Well, it's an interesting story. So, and that's why Belize.
Right. And we also had a number of collaborators in Belize already. We worked with the Belize Zoo for a number of years. And so it just seemed, and they were very supportive, and so it just seemed like a good place to start to do the work.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the findings from your work. What have been some of the findings? Now, you've been going at this since 96, so we've got a fair number of years here. What have been some of the more important findings in your mind?
Well, we did different studies at different sites, but for example, at our Pewaukee study site, this is a suburban site. It's a sort of an island of habitat, not a true island in the lake, but just an island of habitat surrounded by suburban development on the shore of Pewaukee Lake. And we learned that many, many birds stopped there. During our studies, we banded almost 7,000 birds during spring and fall migration. So we thought something's going on here. So what we did was we looked at the plants that were present at the site and the foods that were on those plants. We looked at all the insects and spiders and also the fruits. And then we needed to know, well, if we know what plants are here, are the birds eating them? So then we looked at the birds' fecal samples to find out what they were eating. And so we were able to learn exactly what birds were eating and on what plants those foods could be found. So we could let people know that, for example, oaks and pussy willows have high numbers of insect food for birds.
Very cool. And you've put this all together into a nice book.
Yes. One of our goals was to compile all of our research results into a manual that landowners, and even if you're not a landowner, if you'd like to work on land, volunteer maybe at a park or a school, there is information on things that you can do on your land to help birds. And we compiled the Belize Manual, and it was published in 2006, and now we are distributing the Wisconsin Manual.
And it's a great manual, and it's online. You can get a hard copy of it, but it's also online.
Right. It's on if you go to the Zoological Society website, which I believe there's a link on your website, but it's www.zoosociety.org. Right on the first page, there is a link that you can download the manual. And I'm also distributing it free of charge at talks. And so there's also information there, a link to the schedule at talks if people would like to get a hard copy.
Very good. Well, we'll mention all that information again. If you weren't able to get it written down here, we'll give it to you again. But we have some callers online. By the way, you can join in. We have open lines available at 1-800-642-1234 as we talk with Vicki about songbirds in Wisconsin and some of the work of her organization in studying birds in both Wisconsin and Belize. 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. And let's go to John in Berlin. John, hello to you. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. I saw for the first time a large red-headed woodpecker flying around the city here, jumping from tree to tree. It was one of the, you know, it's smaller than a crow, larger than a bluebird.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it's the first time in 2 years that I've actually seen one that big. I've seen those little small little woodpeckers hopping around all over the place, but I've never seen a large red-headed woodpecker like that around here.
Wow, that could be a pileated woodpecker. Was that recently?
Yeah, it was like yesterday.
And was it in forested areas?
No, right here in the city, right downtown.
Okay. Pileated woodpeckers usually tend to be in more forested areas or areas where there are forests around. But that comes to mind. So what comes to mind if it's a large, large bird, that would be a pileated. There, it is possible that it was a... Did it have a completely red head?
Oh, yes, and it was beautiful when the sun shone through it.
Well, so then it could have been a true red-headed woodpecker. Because other woodpeckers, like the Harries and Downies, do have, they're a bit smaller, they do have, the males do have some red on their head, but if the entire head was red, then it could have been a red-headed woodpecker. And that's a very good sighting because those birds have dramatically declined in numbers.
Yeah, so you were lucky to see it. John, thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you.
Appreciate it very much. And that's one of the birds that... I haven't seen a red-headed in the field now. I didn't see one last year, and I don't think I saw one the year before either. It was like 2 years in a row without seeing one.
Mm-hmm. They require oak savanna habitats, and there's some information on restoring them. I know William Miller has been doing some work on these birds and trying to provide information to people on how you can restore habitat for this bird.
Well, talking today with Vicki Piaskowski of Milwaukee, International Coordinator of Birds Without Borders, Aves Sin Fronteras. It's a research, education, and conservation project which studies birds in both Wisconsin and Belize. Questions about these songbirds and maybe what you can do to help those songbirds? Stay with us. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Maybe talk a little more about the research sites that you had in Wisconsin for your work, Vicki, because you were kind of all over the state.
Mm-hmm, right. I mentioned that with the work that we did in Pewaukee, And then we also worked in East Central Wisconsin in Rosendale. And that was very important because grassland birds are dramatically declining. And the landowners that own the land that we worked on, plus a number of landowners in the surrounding area, had reestablished native grasslands on their land. And as a result, we studied the breeding biology of grassland birds and were very excited when we had breeding birds like bobolinks and sedge wrens and harriers or marsh hawks, which typically need to breed in grasslands. They bred successfully at that site. And then we headed up north and worked in Land O'Lakes, and northern forests are very important to birds. And so we studied the birds that were breeding in northern forests and learned that those birds were also breeding successfully in the specific areas that we studied. So preserving the grasslands and the northern forests are very important to survival of these birds.
Yeah. Let's talk to George in Eagan, Minnesota, next. George, hi to you.
I'm traveling through Wisconsin today, but I had a quick question. I've noticed in my backyard, which is kind of wooded, that I've had a robin that's lived there all year. I mean, it's been 25 below, and I see it outside. And then a couple weeks ago, I noticed there are like 15 to 20 robins moving through my backyard. So I'm wondering if it's global warming, whatever, it's causing them to move early or even stay around all year.
Well, actually, that lets me bring up a very important point. If birds can find food, they don't need to migrate. And there are some robins that will stay around in Wisconsin or even in Minnesota where you are year-round because they can find food. They can find fruits. There are some robins that do stay year-round. Many migrate, but there are some that do stay.
Yeah, I know. In my backyard, I have some of those buckthorn trees that still have the fruit on them.
That's probably why they're there. Buckthorn is what we recommend in our manual is to replace those plants. With native fruits like winterberries and other sumacs, other native fruits. But the buckthorns are definitely a fruit that stays on throughout the winter, and birds do feed on that.
Yeah, interesting. Thank you, George, for calling. Although buckthorn is something we definitely want to get rid of if we can get rid of it.
Yes. Another thing that we found that, you know, many birds feed on insects, and when we did our studies at Pewaukee, we found that the buckthorns had very, very small amounts of insect food for birds. So although they do have the fruits, they do not have insect food for birds. And insects are important to birds, all birds, during the breeding season.
Thanks again, George. Appreciate your call. Seth in Green Bay will turn to you next. Hi, Seth.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just heard the comment on the pileated woodpecker, which has always been one of my favorite birds to watch and to observe. But I just wanted to say I have seen them, you know, quite a bit in their, you know, and I would say in northern Maine, in the wooded sections, northern Wisconsin. I live in Green Bay now, and, you know, certainly occasionally see them, you know, in the city. But they seem, you know, they certainly seem to be attracted to, you know, deadwood or somewhere where they can just kind of peck at whatever insects seem to be in the dead trees. And I was going to say to your caller, you know, they tend to have a more methodic, slow peck, you know, when they're going at things. They're quite a large bird. And when they fly, they tend to have a swooping kind of fly. You know, they'll give a two or three swipes of their wings and then kind of dip and then come up. And the final thing is they have this wonderful call that sounds like something you'd hear in a Tarzan movie. You know, you can really hear them when they start calling. It's kind of a... they're very definitely... when you see one, you know it. They look like a giant woody woodpecker.
Yeah, they sure are. Vicki, comment?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I tend to think of them in more forested habitats because that's where I see them, but I suppose they could be moving from one place to another, and possibly that could be what it was. It depends on the size. They are very large birds.
And Seth, for you in Green Bay, if I know that there's a nice population of pileateds in Peninsula State Park and some of the parks in Door County, so something else to think about. Vicki Piaskowski of Milwaukee, as we talk with her today about songbirds and what we can do to help keep them around. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question about songbirds or a comment about them or experience to share, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Vicki Piaskowski of Milwaukee, International Coordinator of Birds Without Borders, Aves Sin Fronteras. It's a research, education, and conservation project studying birds in Wisconsin and Belize. So really fun to hear what they are doing, her organization is doing in the way of research. And I want to mention as well, or re-mention, that there's a great publication that Vicki and others have put together called How to Manage Your Land to Help Birds. And you can download it. You can get a free copy of it that way. We'll talk some more with her about that book as we move along today. And I expect that's been a pretty popular book so far, Vicki.
Yes, it has. We tried to make it very user-friendly. There's lots of pictures of birds and plants and habitats. And so, and there's some general information for birds. And I think one of the things that we emphasize is that individuals can make a difference. And while many people think that you must have a large area in order to attract birds or provide a bird habitat, during migration, small areas like backyards, if they have native plants, can be a wonderful habitat for birds. And there's information on this in the manual.
Yeah, there's a lot, and there's some great lots of color photos with some great, and you know, all of the birds named. So I don't know how many birds do you have in here that you know? How many photos you have of birds all named?
I think there's at least 150.
Yeah, it's a ton of great photos, and also some information on habitat and so forth. And well, and I know there's some drawings on some of the spiders and insects and so forth as well.
Right, the foods that birds eat. Right.
So, and the book is 146 pages long, so it's a nice. And can you get it in a hard copy, which is soft color, but color? How do we? We don't want to download that. How do we get that?
Well, I'm giving a number of talks through April, and I'm distributing it free of charge at the talks. And there's a list of those on our website. If people are not able to attend the talks, they can email me, and what we can do is put their name on a list, and if we have copies available after the talks, then we can send copies, mail
okay.
people copies.
All right. Do you want to? And your address is found on the website?
Yes.
Okay, and the website address again is
www.zoosociety.org.
Zoo Society, Z-O-O Society.org.
Right, right. And I have to thank U.S. Fish and Wildlife provided funding that covered the majority of printing costs. So this is why we're able to distribute this free of charge.
That's great. And when you go around and speak, is this the kind of thing you talk about, how to manage your land?
Yes. I talk about our research results, but really what people can do to manage their land to help birds. There are many things that people can do. I think one of the most important is to plant native plants. If you have non-native plants, gradually remove them and replace them with native plants, because while people don't really think about it, a lot of birds feed on the caterpillars and leafhoppers and spiders that are found on the leaves or branches of native plants. And so this is a very important source of food for birds during migration and also during the breeding season.
Excellent. Let's go to Bill in Oshkosh. Bill, hello to you.
Hello. I hope to get out of this highway noise in just a second. I was wondering what other organizations that Zoo Society is linking up with. One in Washington is called the Theodore Roosevelt, I think, Restoration Group. Mm-hmm. And it's Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Corps, I think. They're trying to get hunters or land opened by landowners for hunters, and they're very interested in land management, mm-hmm. and they're funded also by the, I think, the agriculture bill mm-hmm. that came through.
Mm-hmm. And if you look in our manual, there is a page of our partners and collaborators, and we have over 40 collaborators or groups that we have worked with. It's involved sharing protocols, sharing data. We didn't want to reinvent the wheel, so yes, we do have many collaborators for this project.
Oh.
This is becoming a very powerful nationwide organization and working with many different states, and there's certainly an overlap between, you know, wild birds, game birds, and songbirds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate your call. Sharon in Durand, we turn to you next. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. When I was listening to the man talk about the large red-headed woodpecker,
yeah,
and I have one that has been here for 2 years. I put out suet, though, all the time, and he absolutely loves that, and he's king of the hill. When he comes, the other birds move.
Yeah,
but I also live on, like, 40 acres, and 20 of it is wooded.
Oh, so that definitely could be a pileated. One way that you can look to see if you have pileated is they make these large oblong holes in dead trees when they're trying to find food, and that's kind of one of the characteristics that you'll find if you do have pileated woodpeckers around. And there actually are pictures of the pileated woodpecker and the kind of holes that they put into trees in the landowner manual.
Oh, how to manage your land.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I had one more question. I was wondering, now, I also have some beautiful cardinals that are here.
Mm-hmm.
And do they usually like to wait till the birds get the seed on the ground and eat it from the ground rather than from the feeder?
I think cardinals will feed both at the feeder and on the ground.
Yes.
It depends on, I think, how many other birds at the feeder. Cardinals also tend to feed earlier or later in the day, but I think they will. I've seen them feed at both places.
Yeah, I have as well at my home feeders.
Okay, because I know that, well, right now with the snow, I've got like 15 birds on each feeder. It's just
it's amazing.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sharon.
Yes, thank you.
Appreciate the call. That reminds me, I think the feed was getting a little low in my feeder. I've got to get out there tonight and put some more seed out for the birds.
Yeah.
That's something I guess pretty important to keep. Once you start feeding, you probably should keep it going.
Yeah, although birds can find natural food. I mean, if it's very, very severe weather, feeding birds does help their survival. If it's like below zero for a week or more. But otherwise, birds can survive and find their own natural food.
Mike in Cushing, let's turn to you next. Hi, Mike.
Hi there. Say, a comment about the woodpeckers again. I have pileated up here in northwestern Wisconsin around. It depends upon the size of the bird. If he saw a red-headed woodpecker, it might be a red-bellied woodpecker, which the male has red completely from his beak all the way down his back, and if you just looked at it from the back, you would have suspected that it was a red-headed woodpecker.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen a red-headed woodpecker up in this area,
mm-hmm.
but and the female red-bellied has just the back of her neck red, so
mm-hmm.
it depends on the size of the bird. If it was as big as a woody woodpecker type, then
yeah,
it
well,
would be pileated. Otherwise, it's most likely a red-bellied woodpecker.
Well, pileated would be up to, what, 18 inches, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. They're big, yeah.
And, you know, there's a dominant order. Then the hairy yeah. comes, the downy goes away, and when the red-bellied comes, the hairy goes away. Yeah, there's a real order.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call. Marsha, or well, let's see. Let's take Waldo, I think, is next in Amory, then Marsha. Let's go to Waldo. Hi, Waldo.
Hi. Your first call about the red-headed woodpecker, you're comparing pileated to a red-headed woodpecker. And the issue of size, I was wondering how big the red-headed woodpecker is.
Well, the pileated's about 18 inches. What's the length?
Well, I got my bird book says pileated's about 16 and a half.
16 and a half.
And the red-headed is smaller than that. It's about 9 inches.
So
there's a big size difference. And as he said, I think that if you see a pileated, if it's such a large, large bird, I think that you probably know that.
You know right away. You know right away.
Yeah.
Thanks, Waldo. I didn't realize we were going to spend so much time on woodpeckers. Let's talk about some other birds. Here's Marcia in Bessemer, Michigan. Hi, Marcia.
Yes, this is a different question. A year before last, my husband spotted a bluebird out on a wire.
Mm-hmm.
And so I bought a bluebird house, and we made 5 more and put them on trees, and last year we had none.
Mm-hmm.
What's the deal?
Well, I am not a bluebird expert, and I think that I know that the habitat for bluebirds is extremely important. They like open areas.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an organization in Wisconsin called the Bluebird Restoration Association of Wisconsin, and they have on their website lots of information on placement of boxes, how far apart to put them, the kind of habitat. So I think that would be a really good resource for you to find out exactly what to do to attract bluebirds.
You usually find, you more often see bluebird houses along the edge of woodlots, maybe.
Right.
And on a pole, to be perfectly honest.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, rather than a tree?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
but go online and check the Wisconsin Bluebird Association, is it?
The Bluebird Restoration Association.
And they've got some really good advice there. And thanks, Marcia, for calling. Appreciate your call. Bev and Eau Claire, on to you. Hi, Bev.
Good morning.
Morning.
Well, it's funny, I was calling about bluebirds, but I also wanted to address the previous caller, and I think you hit it the nail on the head. I tried putting houses on trees, and that did not work, and then I moved them to poles, and they were all over the houses that were on poles. So I don't, for some reason, think they like their houses on trees.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, and then you had said that you really weren't too familiar with bluebirds, so maybe my comment that I called about isn't going to be relevant. But this week in Eau Claire, there were bluebirds.
Yes, there are some bluebirds that do stay here year-round.
Oh, there are.
And there are some that migrate. So, yes, you can see them. But people have been seeing bluebirds, so they may be starting to move to migrate back, or they may be birds that stayed here all winter.
I see. I didn't realize that bluebirds stayed all winter.
Yes, some do.
Some do.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Not a lot.
No.
But a few will. And I see you have a bluebird on the cover of your, one of the birds on the cover of your book is a bluebird, if I'm not mistaken. Along with a Baltimore Oriole and
That's an indigo bunting.
Oh, indigo bunting. You're absolutely right. And several birds. I want to get back to the phones and get some other callers online here. And Richard in Sauk County, let's go to you. Hi, Richard.
How you doing? Say, I got a woodpecker question here. Last summer, we had a red-headed woodpecker that was visiting the feeders and the suet and that. And but then there was one, and I got a real close look at it, but it had like a gray head, but it sure looked like the rest of the body was red-headed, but it had a gray head. I mean, I've got old dead elms and box elders that are mature and all full of holes, so I have a lot of woodpeckers, the downies and the hairies and all those, but this one, was just strange to me.
Mm-hmm. It could be a yellow-bellied sapsucker and immature. They're kind of more brownish.
Yeah.
But other than that, I can't really think of anything. The downy and hairy, females will have a blackish head.
But this
they don't
was,
have
this,
the red.
This was definitely a size. I was probably 10 feet away from it because I got the suet feeder hanging on a window, and it was... Well, they sure look like a red-headed woodpecker. I mean, the rest of the body, as far as size and other characteristics, and I said, what the heck is that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was just wondering if you had heard about that at all.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Right. And also, do the woodpeckers take to nest boxes?
I think people have tried, but I think they prefer to make a natural cavity. I think people have tried to provide boxes for them, but I think the best thing is a natural cavity.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Richard. Appreciate your call. And again, you can join us. We've got a little time left here at 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us at talk@WPR.org. I'm looking here. Deb emailed us and said, we have many varieties of birds coming to our feeders, but we've been overwhelmed by pine siskins this year, sometimes 100 to 150 of them at a time. Over the winter, many pine siskins and some goldfinches have become sick and died, and we have many showing signs of sickness right now. From my internet research, it might be salmonella. We clean up after the birds, including sweeping up dropped seed, keeping the feeders clean, and washing the bird bath every night with a 10% bleach solution. Our intention is to take the feeders down in spring so they will disperse. But I don't want to take the feed and water away from the lingering sick birds. I want to continue to feed. What's your advice?
Oh, boy, that's a good question. I guess be sure you keep the feeders clean. And if you do have sick birds, I mean, I think it would be worth calling a wildlife rehabilitator. I haven't heard anything about any finch diseases. And this is a year where there are birds like siskins that are erupting. They're moving. They're an eruptive species, and they tend to, in some years, they'll migrate south, and you will have them in huge numbers. And so, but I have not heard of any that are sick. So I guess the best thing would be to keep the feeders clean as she is doing.
Yeah, it sounds that way. Well, let's take a look at, I know in your book again, I know that there is a section in your book about some of the more important things that you can do to help birds. And what are some of those things you point out in the book?
Well, I think the most important thing, as I've mentioned before, is planting native plants. People, when they think about feeding birds, they think about bird feeders, but half the birds that breed in the U.S. don't have the bill or the beak that allows them to eat at bird feeders. They feed mainly on insects and spiders, and they can find those insects and spiders on plants that are native to Wisconsin. Also, feeder birds that we see at our feeders that people are talking about, chickadees and cardinals, during the breeding season, they switch to feeding on insects. They feed on insects, and that's what they feed their young because it's a very high-protein diet. So, and what's become interesting is there are so many non-native landscape plants available that people are using those. And so there really is a decline in food for birds during migration and the breeding season. So I think the most important thing that people can do is to plant native plants. And there's information in our manual on how to do that. And then also on our webpage, there's a link to an article about the landscaping I did in my yard. And that has further links to suggestions about the kind of plants that you can plant or other resources to help get you started landscaping your yard with native plants.
And we're not talking necessarily about large plots. I mean, it's nice if you have a large acreage and so forth, but most of us are maybe a city lot, and we could still do that.
Well, I can tell you my backyard is in a suburban lot, and it's 60 by 80 feet, and I re-landscaped it for birds, and I've had more than 75 species, and many of these are just the beautiful warblers that migrate through in spring and fall. So it doesn't have to be a huge area, and you can start gradually. You can replace I started by doing one side of my yard a season, and that kept it affordable, and also it wasn't as time consuming as if we had done the whole thing. So I think the most important thing that people can do is start to think about when they're landscaping, planting native plants.
Do you provide water for your birds?
Yes, I do. In the summer, I have a pond that has a solar fountain aerator, and in the winter, I use a heated bird bath.
All right. So, and the birds really use it?
Yes, they do. You do have to keep them clean, though. That's the most important thing, as the caller mentioned. You really do need to keep those bird baths clean.
Richard in Sauk County, we'll go to you. Richard, hello. We got Richard on there? Let's see. Let's try. We lost Richard there. Let's go to Kay in Lancaster. Hi, Kay.
Hi. I was calling just about that woodpecker that the gentleman was talking about, the red-headed woodpecker that looks so strange. And down here in our woods where we live, we've been seeing this red-headed woodpecker, and he has big gray circles on either side of his head. So he's not seeing just one of a time. But we hadn't seen any red-headed woodpeckers much in the last, maybe 5 years. But before that, we had them everywhere. But now I notice we're getting them at the feeder again, just one or two.
Yeah, and those probably aren't what you would call a red-headed woodpecker, are they, Vicki?
I don't think so. Red-headed woodpeckers tend to be in more open areas, and I have not seen them at feeders, but I think that's probably because their numbers are declining. I think probably the most common birds that you could see at feeders would have a red head would be the hairy woodpecker, or the downy woodpecker, or the red-bellied woodpecker.
Yeah, all three of those come to our feeders.
Right.
Vicki, again, to get a copy of your book, you can print it off line, but where's the website address to go to for your organization and the book?
It's www.zoosociety.org.
Zoosociety.org.
Right. And there's a link right on the front, right on the home page that you can go to the manual or the information about the talks.
Yeah, and your talks are, you've still got many talks to give yet.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Vicki, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Vicki Piaskowski is the International Coordinator of Birds Without Borders, Aves Sin Fronteras, a research, education, and conservation project studying birds in both Wisconsin and Belize. And her book, she and others wrote, How to Manage Your Land to Help Birds. It's a great book, very interesting. And also very interesting is another guy, a friend of mine, Gary Engberg of Mesa Mania, and he'll be coming up next to talk with us about fishing and the great outdoors, next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.